Okay, record. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Canine Nose Time chats. We've got a couple in the audience today, which is nice. Audience group. And I thought I would take this opportunity today, but I think it was a special request, wasn't it, Jen, to chat about distractors and just have a little give some people some information of what to expect when they are training distractors and what to expect when they go to competition. But just any announcements. I think Nat and Leanne had their event yesterday out at Glenorie, and don't forget there's the ANKC trial at Northern Suburbs, December 11, I want to say.
I think it's 11, yeah.
Yep. And are there any other events anyone would like to put forward that they know of yet, particularly in New South Wales? If so, just let me know and I'll make sure that I let everyone know about that too next time. And otherwise, distractors. I had a look what distractors meant on the internet. A personal thing that distracts, but the one that I thought was interesting was an incorrect option in a multiple choice question. I thought that was pretty significant.
That's funny. That's not what I would think of when I think of distraction.
No, but it actually really fits the sort of NACSW, ACSW interpretation, because to me, when they're in boxes, you have a choice to either go to ODA or go to, you know, investigate the distractor when it comes to intentional distractors. The ACSW distractors, I'll just make sure the chat is on 1 second. Oh, yesterday's search with Nat was great. Yeah, I heard you went, Elizabeth. That's awesome. Okay, so the ACSW interpretation of distractors, and they only use distractors in containers, intentional distractors. I think we all know that there are plenty of distractors in the environment, no matter what element you are doing, even in containers. You know, dog slobber, I think, you know, we really see in class just how significant dog slobber and dog drool is to, you know, distracting the dogs, or sometimes it's probably a help to the dogs even to navigate the problems. But the level one across the board in ACSW, so whether it's an NW1 or a level one containers, there will be no intentional distractors. In a Nosework 2 or a level two containers, keeping in mind it is only intentional distractors in containers, there is at least one distractor. That could be food. Thank you. That could be food or non-food distractor. In a level three, so a Nosework 3 or a level three containers element, you could have multiple distractors and they could be food or non-food. So I guess that's pretty straightforward when it comes to ACSW, and that's been sort of adapted from NACSW. Any questions?
When you say multiple, is there a cap of like it could be like 10, it could be 5?
I think it's up to the CO.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it multiple. Just hope you get a nice CO that
yeah,
<doesn't>,
okay. Cool.
I think the COs would take into account what other distractors are in the environment, like if you're doing a container search outside or you know, other things. If it's a plain search, you might get more, but this is all hypothesizing because it depends, you know, if Sue's COing or if I CO, you'll get a different
yeah,
experience. But no, as far as I could read in the rules, there is no cap for distractors in level three containers. What we're talking about this morning as well is specific to what the rules say. It's not up to not taking into account what the COs or the judges in when you're talking about A and KC would give you. So we're just talking about the rules. Obviously, that can vary and may vary. And at the end of the day, when everybody's doing the same search, you're exposed to the same problem. So no matter what the rules are interpreted as, that is likely what, you know, everybody's going to get the same puzzle. So ANKC distractors. Distractors, there are no distractors in novice. And that's across the board for all elements. For advanced, you get one non-food distractor. For excellent, you can get two distractors, non-food or food. For masters, you can get three distractors, non-food, food, or a mimic. So that is across the board. So while ACSW, it will only be in containers, ANKC, it could be in any element. And it doesn't have to be visible and out there either. These distractors could be hidden in a car wheel, you know, disguised in the search anywhere else. And you won't necessarily know whether it's a distractor or not, you know. It will be disguised, so you can't see it. It's not just a matter of, you know, going, okay, my dog's having a mad reaction over there, I'm going to move over here. You know, some distractors, your dogs do look very similar. It's a matter of knowing what your dog looks like when they're on distractor or not. So I'll go through just quickly what a non-food distractor is, and this is in the rule book, the ANKC rule book. A non-food distraction is any item, they call it a non-food distraction, not a non-food distractor. Any item other than food that might be enticing to a dog. The non-food distraction may not contain any artificial scent, such as another essential oil, a perfume, or a scented lotion, but it may contain the scent of another animal, such as a cat toy or litter. Food distraction is any kind of human or dog food. Whether a food distraction is used, it must be enclosed within a container such that a searching dog would be unable to consume the food, and such containers should be large enough that they cannot be swallowed whole. A mimic distraction, an object such as a toy or a doll, but it may not include a stuffed animal or statue that looks like a realistic, but it may not include a stuffed animal or statue that looks like a realistic animal. If a mimic distraction is used, the affiliate should have a backup in case a dog contaminates the object. We're going to come back to that. And a human distraction, a person other than the judge who is present inside the search area. The human distraction should be clothed in normal street attire and not be dressed in a costume that significantly alters their shape or appearance as a human. They may be standing or sitting and may look at the dog, but may not maintain eye contact if the dog's attention should turn to them. The human distraction may not speak to or intentionally touch the dog. Okay, that's interesting. So I guess your human distraction, would really need to have a good understanding of nose work or scent work for ANKC when there's such specific sort of instructions as they may look at the dog but not maintain eye contact if the dog's attention should turn to them. So that is pretty interesting. The mimic distraction, I wanted to come back to that because we have in canine nose time classes, we have been using a few sort of unintentionally. They're just sort of been added to the search area to, you know, to just see where the dogs are at and have a little bit of fun. We've had a magpie that basically went with a whole week of the majority of the instructor's classes, which was sort of fun. But that was a very realistic magpie. I think the majority of you guys would have seen that magpie at some point in your searching. I don't, maybe you wouldn't end up getting that in an AKC trial, because it really was like every time I looked at it, I did a little jump and thought, who put a magpie in our search area? Or they've come in from out there to get the food. Oops, hang on 1 second. Oops. Oh, dear. Things are happening. Can't. Okay. Did any of you guys run the magpie in your classes?
Yes. I don't think my dogs reacted to the magpie.
I don't think they did either.
I think perhaps because it was inside, they weren't tricked. I think if it had been outside in a more realistic magpie situation, I think they may have been more fooled. But because they were inside, it wasn't moving, they just blanked it.
Yeah, the same with white boys, yeah, they didn't worry about it either.
That's an interesting point, Danielle, because I think the majority of the searches we did with the magpie were inside.
Mm.
I think I took it outside for a couple, but yeah, the only dog that I really remember thought the magpie was interesting was Lynn's dog, Boss. And when I say interesting, really interesting.
We did go on to searching our food tech, the magpie.
Yeah, yeah, that was a really interesting, like every time he saw it, he just went, and then he went like literally split second, continued on searching and hit the magpie, then went on to hit Oda. Did you ended up getting one of those magpies, didn't you, Lynn?
Yeah, but I've not put it out since.
All right. Yeah. I was wondering if you just left it sitting in your backyard somewhere and if the dogs are sort of like.
No, I'd have to put it out the front yard. I don't want Hugo to take the magpies.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough.
A couple of dogs were actually scared of it in our classes, so yeah, it's interesting.
It makes sense. I mean, it is so realistic, probably too realistic, but there was very few dogs. I think Boss was really the only one that in my classes that even sort of paid it too much attention. It was just, which was sort of surprising, I guess. Most of them checked it out and probably didn't smell like a magpie, so they moved swiftly along. But that was interesting. An object such as a toy or a doll, but it may not include a stuffed animal or statue that looks like a realistic animal. I guess that will be really open to interpretation by the judges, though, because, I mean, I could think something looks like a realistic animal and someone else maybe doesn't. And I don't know, like, because there's only been a few masters run. Mm. Has anyone had any sort of mimic distractors or know what they used for a mimic distractor?
The one I saw in Queensland that they did, it was a person. So he sat in the chair in the middle. Unfortunately, it was in the middle of the rain, so he was in the raincoat. But, yeah, he was a guy in a chair in the middle of the search, the vehicle search.
Oh, that's the human distractor.
Yeah, yeah. But I haven't seen the couple I've seen. I haven't seen anything else other than that.
Okay, so no sort of animal mimic distractors.
No toys or anything, yeah.
Okay. Because in the rules, yeah, the human distractor is in the distraction items, but not in the... Okay, yeah, so for masters, it's non-food, food or human or mimic. Okay, cool. Well, that's sort of summary.
I was just going to say, it seems a bit counterintuitive to say you're using a toy that's a mimic, but it can't look like something real because then it's not really a mimic. To me, the two statements almost contradict one another. So
I totally agree, Elizabeth. I only just read the rules on that just today and I thought it was a bit strange because isn't that the fun, that it kind of looks a bit real?
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, if it's only mimicking a human thing, like a toy baby or something, or a human, I mean, it's not many things like that. I don't know.
It'd be interesting to know what it actually is. So. Yeah, I guess you could have, like, stuffed aliens or, like, those sort of weird-looking
stuffed toys. But what's it mimicking?
I don't know.
It's not a real-life
thing. I agree. I don't know.
Weird.
I was trying to figure that out too, and I'm like, do they just mean like a soft toy, as in a teddy bear is a mimic, or like this week we also had a sheep that was on a rocking or wheels, but it didn't look like a sheep. It sort of almost looked like a Legato. I'm like, is that a mimic distractor? That's a good question. And
just also, I guess it wouldn't be ever be the case that odor would be placed directly on any of
definitely
these.
Definitely not.
Is there anything about how close odor can be to the distractions, or it's in the judges? Sort of
no, there's nothing in the rules about that. I know that.
Mm.
It's probably up to the judge.
Yes, Karen said, just jumped in. Yes, mimic, e.g., my fake cat can't be used unless masters. Yeah, we're just discussing the note in the distraction that says an object such as a toy or doll, but it may not include a stuffed animal or statue that looks like a realistic animal. Maybe they just need to take out the not. It may include. Anyway, that was in everyone else's rule book too, right?
Yes, it is. I've got it open now.
Okay. Well, maybe that's a question we can ask.
I know it has been asked, so I'll see if I can find the answer, because I think Ash asked in the ANKC Facebook group. So okay. I'll see if I can find the response to that. Why are we?
Yeah, thank you. That would be great. It might clarify a few things. I've clarified a few things for us. Of course you did. So that is sort of the outline. I just wanted to go over with everyone about what, what you could expect in a search. And it's taken me a while to get my brain around the fact that we're adding extra distractors to all the elements, but it's just different, right? It's something that you need to train for and make sure that you're prepared before you go in. I think it's just adding an extra layer to your training. Has anyone sort of really started? I know that most people are training already in advanced and excellent, but when it comes to specific training for distractors, has anyone got any good strategies that they're currently using to train those?
Yes, definitely. So have you guys gone through and discussed what sort of food distractors they've put in some of the ANKC trials? Sorry, I had to drop out because my microphone wasn't working.
No, that's good. I'm glad you came back with them.
I missed some of your chat. So did you guys talk about any of the food distractors they've been using?
No, we just went over what the rules said. So any type of human food or dog food.
Yeah.
So I do know that somebody, because we were talking about hierarchy of reward the other week, because with Danielle and I trained together on a Thursday morning, and we did this hierarchy of reward with just our dogs, just for something fun. We just needed a nice training exercise to do after Crosby passed away. And, it was just lots of, getting the dogs happy again and the humans. Mm. And, every test we did, the Twiggy sticks came out on top. And then I was talking to someone else who did a similar, because I'd spoken to them about it, and they did a similar test, but a sort of closed as using it as a distractor, and the Twiggy sticks came out on top for that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
They say that's what they used in Masters containers at Stroud, and that's what a lot of got caught with a lot of the dogs. They alerted on that in Masters. Yeah.
Yes. So that was interesting. They literally will use the highest value distractor that is out there and available.
Yeah. Did you hear about the distractor that John Sam used in his excellent container search in Canberra recently? It was a warmed up lamb bone.
Warmed up?
Yes. Yeah. He microwaved it, warmed it up, and then put it in one of the containers in the search. So these judges are getting very creative.
Yes, they indeed Indeed they are. And I mean, I that to me, it's a whole different, like, we're training our dogs on odor, and this is something different. And you know, this, and they're all of these elements, really, it's a combination of teaching your dog not to go to distractors and also teaching your dog to go to odor. It's not just about odor when you're doing that exercises like this. So yeah.
What I tend to train with distractors is I make up like a hide with really fresh, lots of odor. This is just starting off. Well, originally, in taking a few steps back, obviously you start off with low value rewards and then work up to the high value ones. But when you're working with the high value ones, I tend to make up a really, you know, large hide with maybe 4 or 5 fresh Q-tips in it. And I tend to put that pretty close to the distractor. So maybe, I don't know, maybe 1 meter or 2 away. And my dogs have all worked really well with that and ignored that and gone to the odor. And then, you know, you just party with them there for leaving the distractor. But that's how I tend to do it anyway. And it seems to work quite well.
I do something very similar with my classes. And I guess the asterisk before that is you don't start training that until the dogs have a really good understanding of searching and they are already odor obedient. Like they're the two sort of prerequisites, which I assume most people would wait until you had those before you throw in something like a warm lamb bone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I do something very similar in that I have the distractor and the odor very close together because then it becomes a choice. Which is what I think is really, which is what struck me with that interpretation of distractors that says an incorrect option in a multiple choice question. And I'm like, that makes so much sense to me because of the way that I train distractors. I'll even have 3 distractors and 1 odor. And if they're close together, making sure the dog hits the distractor first and then has the opportunity to hit odor.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good way to train it. And the other thing I wanted to mention about that, and like your example, Sue, is that when you're training something specific like that, is strip everything else away. There is nothing else but these, what you're focusing on, that one exercise. So there's nothing, no other complications in the environment or visual distractors or anything else. It's just what's in front of you.
Yeah, make it really simple.
And yes. I think that that's why it's good to start on containers with distractions, because it's dogs like it's a very visual cue for them what they're doing, they're searching, and you can have a lot of fun with distractions because they're all inaccessible, they're all in containers, so theoretically the dog can't get to the distraction. And most dogs and yeah, like what Sue was saying, it's all about setting the dog up for success from the start, right? You want to make it so that the game is easy for them. Because what I found is that when I've sort of intentionally gone about, okay, let's do some distractions in containers, is my dogs kind of love the game. You know, I'll gradually make the distractions more and more challenging for them. And by the end of it, they're like, oh yeah, chicken nugget, whatever. I know that the odor is what's going to pay me. And I actually find that they enjoy distractions because it's a fun game for them.
And it's adding that clarity to the situation. Like the dog understands what's being asked for of it.
Exactly.
And that's what a lot of dogs are missing when they sort of get thrown into a trial and they're not quite ready to face distractors. And it's an added sort of complication, especially the way that we start out training, which is paired, or you know, we've asked the dogs to go find food and then all of a sudden we're like, okay, actually here's the food that's hidden, go and find your odor. And it's making sure that that is really clear in the dog's mind about what their task is, which, you know, there's benefits, so many benefits to training your dog on paired, or especially for dogs with, you know, different, that's a whole nother podcast. But yeah, I do think that clarity makes the dogs more confident and makes the handler more confident if they can read what their dog is actually searching for.
I think the other important thing with training distractors is your reinforcement hierarchy. Mm. Like, use your high stuff if they're going to leave alone the high value distractors. Mm. There's got to be a reward that's worth their while to ignore that stuff. And that's why you even want to add in play or some additional reward at the end of it.
That is such a good point, Danielle, because we did a whole week on distractors. I think it was 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and I literally did it with every single class because all my classes are, I think, level 4 or above. So they're all on ODA, not all 3 ODAs, but searching strongly at least for Birch. So my whole theme for the week was training distractors. So I had a core sort of 3 exercises that I did with every class. And in our level 8 class, so that's the highest, you know, they're training at a sort of a nosework 3 level. They're essentially training at masters, but probably competing at advanced or excellent. And there was one of the, and I hope she won't mind me, I'm not going to mention her name, but she was searching and her dog worked so beautifully. And, you know, but you could tell it was really a struggle. It found the odor. It also found all the distractors, but it went to odor and it was really nice. And then it got the, you know, the reward, and the dog immediately sort of went back to one of the distractors. I'm like, what are you rewarding with? And she had sort of like a dry, I don't know what it was, but it was not the dog's favorite food. And I said, oh my goodness, next week come with roast whatever it is. Because yeah. Your dog has just left, and because that class brought all their own distractors, they each brought something really, like we had horse poo, we had like raw steak, we had, I don't know, there was probably pork belly or something, you know, there was really high value things. Okay, your dog has just worked through all of those, ignored all of these amazing things, and it got some dried something.
Yeah, that's not right.
No, so Danielle, that is a really good point, is that if you're thinking about training distractors, make sure your reward trumps, you know, it's the best thing, which is hard with the Twiggy sticks if they're using those, but, you know, the point is there. But I want to go through that exercise actually, because it was really fun exercise to do with the class and watch the progress over the 3 runs we did. And the first run was just plain, I think I was using pipes. So you could use any container you want. Just I just kept it consistent because I wanted to strip everything away and just have a really simple, you know, I think there was 8 pipes and really strong odor, only one odor as well. I think that's important because you're really focusing on training the odor rather than the distractor. Mm. So only having one odor out is also important. So I had the odor was at the back. And all at the front was just empty pipes. Simple search, dogs came in, nailed it. You know, they're all odor obedient dogs. They have very good search ethic. Next run, the pipes all got different really low value distractors. The odor was moved, but not very far, and nothing was put in the place of where the odor was, so that there was no sort of contamination of the odor moving. So the odor had moved, but not too far. So the picture looked very similar. And this is all in the space of a couple of meters. Nothing else to sort of compete with that. So low value distractors. And depending on what class or what level your dog's at would depend on how high value you go. And so that, you know, ran that run as well. And that worked really well just to give the dog some context about what the job was, but also to make odor paying very clear. And then the third run, depending on what level it was, sometimes I'd make the odor inaccessible but still keep the picture very clear. But most of the time it was just high level distractors. So that's where your bacon and your whatever else it was for the dogs that had done the previous run very successfully. That's important as well. If your dog, you know, it's a good sort of progression to make sure you can monitor where your dog is sort of at, so that you know you never want to go too far. I know we always do it. We're like, one more run. let's do one more. That always like backfires. Don't do one more run. Take the three, walk away, be happy with your dog. But that might be a fun exercise. And then, you know, do it again, but change containers and then upgrade to taking it, adding in your environmental distractors, whether it's a couple of chairs or a couple of whatever, you know, your visual distractors over time. But when you're starting, you're introducing a new concept, I think it's really important to keep it really simple. Any other questions?
So I thought it was interesting to think about whether a dog is actually alerting on these distractions or whether the handler is misinterpreting extreme interest as an alert, because I think some people really aren't patient enough in allowing their dog to make a decision to move on from a distractor in the training phase. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a good question. I'm actually going to write that down, because I think when we get to starting to interpret our dogs at odor and what we do at distractors could literally be a whole nother
true
topic, and working through recognizing that, because the question I even posed to my class this week, and this was the advanced class, was someone said leave it when their dog got to a distractor. And so that opened up to me that, like, I just, my brain started sort of going, if we say leave it to that, dog probably has a very big history of leave it. What if we don't know it's a distractor? What, you know, then we
bring
in all of these other questions that I was like, oh, we need to talk about this.
Yep.
So I will write that down, leave it, and training how to, there's a really cool exercise that you can do. It's putting all these distractors out with your dog, for your dogs, and like literally having them, you know what they are, and everyone in the class knows what they are, and writing down what your dog's reaction is to each particular box.
That's cool.
Which I think is a really useful exercise, and maybe we can do a little workshop in the holidays or something like that, to recognize, you know, what your dog's behavior is on rose petals. As a bad example, I don't think they'd use that. But, you know, compared to, you know, we've used lavender before, and the first time we used lavender, it got everybody. And then the next time they really didn't care. And when it did get them, I put the lavender in a different box and it didn't get anyone. So it was sort of like, well, is it the dog slobber because everyone's excited to smell the lavender? Is it the, you know, is it the container? And it turned out that, you know, by changing and putting the lavender in a different box, it turned out to be something different. You know, it wasn't necessarily the lavender, it was potentially the box or the dog slobber. And Jen just said, yes, please, we'll help with deaf dog donkey. So yeah, it's a good question about, so it's basically recognizing your dog and waiting until they,
well, is it depends on what you think your dog's alert is, right? Is your dog just intensely sniffing? Is that their alert behavior? Or are they just intensely interested in figuring out what that particular smell is? Or whether that distractor is accessible to them to eat?
Yeah, I have a dog with no final response. Well, she does have a final response, but it's not a look at me. It's just more sort of intense at odor, and sometimes there's a paw. That same behavior can be for steak as it is for odor.
And I think that's where it gets confusing to people.
Yeah. Yes. Where my dog, with a final response, has got a drop at source, that is much clearer, but it's got its positives and negatives, I guess.
Yeah.
For both ways. I actually wouldn't mind. Maybe if we all do some homework this week, and maybe that's a really good discussion point for next week. We can talk about you know, analyzing what your dog does when they get to either distractor or odor, whether we, you know, having a bit of a think about what the pros and cons of telling your dog leave it, or what you should do it when you get to a distractor, what should your response be if your dog has an even larger response at a distractor, and maybe how to, you know, maybe some suggestions on how to train that.
I can tell you that I very much would not do a leave it to distractors. I think the only, because you don't want to create, you know, a chain where the dog is sniffing something, you have to cue it to move on, and then it goes back to search, right? Ideally, you want your dog to hit distractors and dismiss them themselves and move on to searching themselves. I think the only...
You're right. They do. Sometimes they need longer to process them.
Exactly. So
it will look like, but you know that 1, 2, 3 that you count when your dog is sniffing dog pee? And usually if they haven't alerted after 1, 2, 3, it's not odor.
Yep.
So here's a curveball with that, and a tangent, of course, is that there are some dogs that I have recently, it probably only just occurred to me, that they get to odor and they're actually analyzing the other dog's saliva at odor. And then you can see when they go, all right, I'm done with that. Alert.
Yep. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And I was like, why did it take me so long to realize this was happening? And then it's got me thinking, if you're rewarding, what have you just rewarded?
Yep.
anyway, yes. So dogs, so many. This, the rabbit warrens you can go down, right? But, I think we, it's, I would agree with you. I think leave it could be opening up another, you know, even not necessarily making it such a good experience for the dog.
Exactly.
Because it's sort of a, you know, it's a verbal correction instruction that the majority of us train our dog for safety reasons.
And I think you can fall into the trap of using it too often in searches to sort of redirect your dog where you want them to search. Say if they're going off of a vehicle, you want them to go back to the vehicle, or going away from containers, you want them to go back to containers. And if you use it in those circumstances, you may be calling your dog off of however the odor is moving. You know, you don't know what your dog is actually responding to.
Yes, 100%.
You only use it, I mean, you would, could only use it when you're in training and you know where the distractors were. If you're in a trial, you don't know where the distractors are. So why would you say leave it? I mean, you really have to know how your dog indicates before you'd ever use it in a trial. So I never use it. I don't. The less I say in trial, the better, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Break the focus.
Well, I think that goes for training too, really. I think the less we say in training, the better as well. I really like, for distractors, I really like Jill Marie's sort of, I'm not sure if she used it for distractors, but she'd go in towards the dog and help the dog move along. I actually think she used it for sticky dogs at odor, but that would, to me, is a, you know, you're moving towards the dog, you're not pulling them, but just sort of gently moving the dog along. But I also think distractors is something that's going to be unique to every single dog how to train. It's, it there's is. No blanket. Because, I mean, the beagle, you could...
Yeah.
Like, that's a whole nother, that's a separate training to the rest of us.
Yeah. Surprisingly, though, Rem's done really, really well with the food distractors. Like, he's, because I guess he's so... enthused with the search and the odor obedience. Like, we had Twiggy Sticks in his excellent vehicle search up Australia, and we didn't even know where it was. So that was a win for us.
That day. That's lovely. That's awesome.
Yeah. So for me, it's more obviously because they're being beagles, like when they start sniffing the ground, and obviously go, oh, is he actually following Oda, or is he actually staff sniffing something else? So it's trying to work that sort of distraction out with the guys is my hardest point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to pull them off if they're trying to capture the odor out further, but you also, well, are you actually really searching, or you looking for rabbits or something? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough one. And they've still got to process the odor. That's the other thing. Like, I feel like if we don't let them finish processing the distractor odor, it's always going to be in their mind as like, oh, I haven't finished that puzzle yet. I'm gonna
Yeah.
So, you know, we just have to make the odor that we have intended for them to find more rewarding, more consistent, and what information we're giving to our dog at real odor.
And I think Danielle brings up the other issue of the unintentional distractions that are out there, and that's going to be super individual to dogs. Like, is it lizards or rabbit poo or other dogs' scent? You know, those distractions are always going to be out there, and what is your plan when you encounter them? Like, for example, in our class on Thursday, Pepper the lab got super distracted, or the other Thursday she got super distracted by a smell that was obviously animal, like rabbit or something. Yes, and she was like, you know, she wasn't normally like that in searches. She's normally quite focused on a search, but she was just, there's something in this grass or this bush, and I need to go sort that out before I get back to searching. And those types of distractions you can't necessarily train so systematically, right? Because we're not always aware that they're going to be around in our search areas.
Exactly. And I think it's just covering that over time, you know, the dogs will get more experience. We get more experience reading the dogs, putting them in more and more of those situations gradually, you know, because there's always going to be unintentional distractors. We can't help that. And I even think the unintentional distractors, you know, it makes sense to me that ACSW doesn't add more distractors to the environment, because the environment for dogs is everything. Mm. It's a real different puzzle when you're adding intentional distractors to search areas. And I'm still getting there with that, and understand that it's a whole different way to train if it's going to be in every single element.
Yeah, it's hard, because there's a dog in our class, and she's being a gun dog, she's obsessed with birds. So anytime the bird comes in, and she's been caught out in trials, every time a bird enters the search, she doesn't. She's like obsessed with the birds instead. So it's hard to train that sort of thing. You can't really, you know, go get a whole heap of cages and live birds.
I have birds, you can have some of mine.
Like, we've had cockatoos in training, but yeah, it's really hard to try and help her get past that.
It is. And if you've got that dog also that is so fixated on, you know, twiggy sticks or whatever the food reward is, you know, that's just an added complication for that dog in particular. Not every dog is going to find that to be as tempting. It's interesting. I think there's so much to discuss, but I do think we should probably call it so that people come back next time.
Yeah.
Because we've gone on just a little ways. So I would like to maybe put a challenge out to everyone to sort of start maybe with doing some distractors this week, and sort of getting it clear in your own minds how you are reacting. And there's no right or wrong, I guess, because every dog is different, like I said. But do some intentional low distraction training in containers, because I do agree with Danielle that that's a great way to start introducing distractors. But just to get your it clear in your mind how your dog works them, and your strategy when they do stay a little bit longer, or what's your response to that. And maybe that is a good starting point for next week. But if anyone would like anything specific we can discuss and talk as a group next week, please put forward your topics either in the group or send me a message. And otherwise, thank you everyone for joining. Thanks, Danielle. Thanks, Sue. Danielle's. and for everyone that's contributed today. And let's do it again next week.
Yeah, thanks, Lucia. These are a great idea, I think.
It's yeah.
Talking about various things. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Oh, and also, one last thing is we are on the Google Podcasts. So, and it's just the voice only. There's no video. But Google have picked up, they finally picked it up. So you can subscribe to it on the Google if you want to be let known when the next one comes out. So you can catch up. Awesome. Well, let's do it all again next week. And we'll see you then.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lucia.
Thank you. Thanks.